Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Legal Eagle, Bob Nersesian, whose latest book, The Law for Gamblers, is must reading for all intelligent players. Bob Nersesian, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hi, thanks for having me again. It's always a pleasure.
It's a pleasure for us, too. About a month ago, a federal judge said Phil Ivey's edge sorting maneuvering at the Borgata in New Jersey broke the rules of gambling as defined in this state. Were you surprised by the ruling?
Well, surprised is an interesting twist of a phrase. No, I wasn't surprised by the ruling. Do I think the ruling is correct? No, I don't. Do I think that that case is over? No, I don't. I've read the case. The judge was a little weird on some stuff, in my opinion. But perhaps out front on that is one of the statements he made is, well, they unilaterally changed the organization of the cards. It's my understanding that they had a dealer changing the organization of the cards, and that judge seems to have a funny take on the word unilaterally. Then another thing, like in the English, the Crockford's case with Ivy, they have these courts are abandoning the concept of gambling as a competition. And they just look at it as a commercial venture and take the gaming and the strategy and the abilities to use skills against your opponent out of the equation. And then perhaps the thing I found most bizarre is the decision found that Mr. Ivey was using marked cards. Not that he marked the cards, although, because the decision seems to go off on the word mark as a noun. And I think the statute approaches mark as a verb. Okay. He found the cards were marked cards when they were turned, when they were edge sorted, and that Mr. Ivey and his compatriot were the ones who marked them. Taken to a different level and looking at the regulations in the state of New Jersey, I want to highlight one that I find that I think is determinative of the whole thing. They're saying that Mr. Ivey and his associate did not follow the, or they broke the rules of blackjack.
Baccarat.
Or not blackjack.
Baccarat.
Baccarat, I understand. They broke the rules of baccarat as defined by the Gaming Commission in New Jersey. Well, the Gaming Commission doesn't really regulate players. It regulates casinos. And in that sense, they're not the ones who would be breaking it, but more importantly, there's a regulation out there that says that the casino shall not use cards where the backs of the cards can be, where any portion of the backs of the cards can be used to determine the value of the cards, of the face of the cards. It seems to me that when you look at that and when you look at what happened here with the edge sorting, that it was the casino in using that particular deck of cards that violated the gaming regulations.
In addition to that, one of the listeners had sent a question about the casino has very strict regulations about the manner in which they can deal the game in down to...
There's that too, yes.
And so...
And this wasn't authorized baccarat necessarily, because of all of the restrictions that Phil asked for and that the casino agreed to. And I'm sorry, I don't know him personally, so calling him Phil is a little presumptuous on my part. I'll revert back to Mr. Ivey. There's that. The casino fell down on so many places. And again, this is a competition. You know, also, Richard, adding to what you just said, the casino has an obligation to inspect the cards before they put them into play. When we're looking at edge sorting, 10 years ago, Bill Zender wrote about this in Game Protection for the Casino Executive.
Wong wrote about it in about 1980.
Right, I was going to say, and what Bill points out is that it had already been long out there for a decade or more. So, you know, you're not doing anything here that the casino, one, can't guard against, and two, under the New Jersey regulations, they were mandated to guard against because they have an obligation to inspect the cards to make sure that, as I said a moment ago, the backs of the cards cannot be used to determine the value of the fronts of the cards, i.e. edge sorting. It's all there. It's all been around for decades. I don't know if Mr. Ivey's attorneys put all of this in front of the court, but I did get the impression in reading the decision that you have a court here that did a knee-jerk reaction, looked at the amount of money, said that's not how this is supposed to work, and said, therefore, this must be cheating. Or not cheating, no. Cheating or a violation of the regulations, but not fraud.
Which, right, because they said he wasn't cheating, right?
Right.
He
had not committed fraud, but he had breached the contract with the casino, the contract requiring that the game be played according to the New Jersey regulations, which the alleged marking of cards by Mr. Ivey violated.
I also have to say Borgata deserves the Big Balls Award for asking for not just the money he won, but the amount of EV that they would have won had he not been doing it.
And, you know, I understand where they're coming from, and I get the philosophy and the theory under which that may be awarded back. But the scary part about that is if they do win it, that says the casinos are entitled to win. And if that's the law in this country, then everybody should stay home or take their assets and put them that they're going to gamble with, put them overseas, expatriate them, and play exclusively overseas. Because that's not, dare I say, that's not the American way. It's a competition. It's, you know, one other thing. It is always the participant. Hoyle, from the earliest writings on the rules of games and cards, the duty to protect the cards always falls with the person holding the cards. Nobody mentioned that anywhere. Where is Borgata holding up that duty when they're out there not protecting their cards, especially again in a circumstance that has been public for decades?
I want to take a devil's advocate to part of what you said on the part where the casino is forbidden to use marked cards. The cards themselves were not marked, showing the face of it until a certain number of them were turned. So it's the turning process which marked the cards, according to his, not the cards themselves.
But it's still the cards themselves.
The cards are
flawed. Because the cards, the rule is they cannot put out a deck of cards where the front value of the cards can be determined from what is on the back of the card. And that is exactly what those decks allowed.
You don't have to add
in the other part because that's not in the statute. That's not in the regulation. The regulation says you can't use cards where that can be done.
I don't think you can hold up one card and say what the other side is.
No, but you're not playing one card.
Turn the other 51.
You're playing with a deck of cards, and the regulation relates to the deck of cards. You can't put them into play.
Okay, all good. Right?
I see your devil's advocate position, but I don't accept it. Although, guess what? I'm wrong. There's a federal judge out there who has already said I'm an idiot on this.
Well, and then it's not my purpose to win this argument today. It's just to bring it up and to see what your response
remember
is.
Remember from past shows, if Phil was turning the cards or his compatriot was turning the cards, now I think they're manipulating physically, and that would be barred.
Okay, but that didn't happen.
No.
All right. Continuing on this, what is your gut feeling as to whether or not the Borgata would have brought this action had not the Crockford case been publicized?
They wouldn't have thought of it.
So they wouldn't have any idea what was happening?
No, they would have figured out what happened.
Well, Bill Zender wrote an article about it before it even happened.
Yeah.
Right? It happened here in Vegas. He wrote an article, and then Phil Ivey went and did it in England, and I think the AC plays happened after Bill Zender's article about it. So, I mean, how stupid are these casinos? I mean, did they just not pay attention to any of this?
Yeah, well, I think that's the point. And when they did find it out, they would, you know, here's another interesting thing. This lawsuit could never have been brought in Nevada and could never have been won in Nevada.
All right, tell us how.
Because in Nevada, a casino cannot sue a player for gambling losses, even if they're cheating. All they have is the ability to seek out a criminal complaint, and as the decision says, this wasn't criminal. So in Nevada, because, and this was mentioned, the public nuisance circumstance of gambling was mentioned in the New Jersey case. In Nevada, the fact that it is a public nuisance and that it is illegal except for the license granted means that gamblers still can't sue over losses or winnings, period. And that's true for players as well. They can't sue for winnings. They must bring a regulatory claim in front of the Nevada Gaming Control Board, which is not a lawsuit, and that's their sole remedy. And it's by statute, and it created an exception to the rule, and that exception is only for players.
All right. We've
beat that to death.
time to try to beat something else to death. You may not...
Oh, wait. I have one more question. What if you're playing and you notice that a card is smudged or, you know, defective or whatever, and you take advantage of it?
In New Jersey?
Well, yeah, I mean, here in Vegas or in New Jersey. In New Jersey.
Here in Vegas, what's going to happen? The casino, again, can't sue you for the money back, and I don't see anything that makes that cheating. I've been wrong before because I thought Phil Ivey had a pretty solid case here. You know, we're really going to go over the edge when some court somewhere all of a sudden says counting cards is cheating. But I think if you want enough money at it, you could get judges, you know, looking out into space wondering, how do I get that money back for this person acting in commerce? And this is another weird twist. In every other industry, government stands behind the consumer. In casino gambling, for some reason, all the cards are stacked against the consumer and for the casino. Bizarre, huh?
Well, we're going to bring up another case where the law isn't quite on the consumer's side. You may not have heard, but we had an election a little while ago. And assuming the recounts don't change anything.
I count on that. Gosh.
I'm curious how Trump's election will affect gamblers. The area in which I'm most concerned today, civil forfeiture. Although Trump has been all over the place on a lot of issues, he's been consistently pro-police. January of last year, Attorney General Eric Holder suspended the federal use of civil forfeiture laws. It's hard to imagine Sessions, who is Trump's attorney general select, taking the same stance. If so, this does not bode well for us gamblers or anyone else in possession of cash. What's your thought on this?
My thought is that the jury's out even with Sessions. I truly don't think at this point that this is on President-elect Trump's page or in his book or Sessions either. Okay. So they're going to be looking at it on a case by case or a new issue coming up perspective. And I wouldn't necessarily be so sure that this would be looked at as a law and order issue, because there is enough of the concept and perspective that taking this money is a revenue-raising indirect taxation circumstance for police forces, and it's distasteful in the extreme. I would hope President-elect Trump would recognize that as well, and that comes from a Republican President-elect Trump, if you ever listen to this. So I don't see where this is going yet. I don't have an opinion. I'm hopeful because he's here for change. That's what he keeps saying. And one of the changes that he has even alluded to is individual liberties in things that don't directly involve criminal activity or injure consumers. And I don't see this being either of those.
Yeah, I don't have a take. I have no, you know, I have no idea what he's going to do. I mean, it would not surprise me either way. I could see him coming out and saying, this is ridiculous, you're stealing people's money. Or I could come out and see him say the opposite. I just have no idea what he might do.
All right. All right, let's move on.
Although I will say, I lean toward him, not the cash seizure thing, but I lean toward the idea that he would be good for gambling. I mean, you know, he owned casinos. He might be the kind of guy who says, yeah, we should be able to bet sports. Yeah, we should have internet casinos.
Owning casinos is not the same thing as being pro player.
It doesn't necessarily follow through that way, though, because he understands gambling.
Yeah, and he knows gambling is a good business that can make a lot of money. So
he also likes to see people make money, and he's spoken out very strongly about the entrenched interests of historic business and the juice and getting rid of that stuff, emptying the swamp, if you will. And hopefully this goes back to your internet gambling. Maybe that door will get opened a little bit, and he'll say, hey, we are in the, what is this called now, the sharing economy? Yeah. And that's just another part of it, really. And if it takes out the brick-and-mortar casinos, that's what competition is. And he has said time and again he wants to unleash competition. And I think he's even mentioned the economic theory and philosophy that deals with this called creative destruction. And creative destruction is taking out antiquated industries and replacing them with those that are more efficient. If he holds true to that thing, this could be very good for players. But at the same time,
who knows?
like Bob was alluding to, it could be a circumstance where his old buddies and even possibly some questionable nemesis, is that the word? Such as Mr. Wynn will be protected everywhere and at every turn. Don't know.
But he hasn't
really owned a casino in 15 years, has he?
Yeah, I'm worried less about Mr. Wynn than I am about Mr. Adelson. But I digress.
Well, I don't think that Mr. Adelson and Mr. Trump ever had issues. I think Mr. Wynn and Mr. Trump did, or President-elect Trump had in the past.
Mm. Also at the election.
Could be wrong.
Also at the election in Nevada, a recreational marijuana law was passed. What do you think this is going to mean for players who wish to smoke weed in Las Vegas?
Well, they're not going to be able to smoke weed in the casino under that law. So your question really is, what will this do for players who show up high? Is that the question? Who show up at a casino stoned or lit on marijuana?
There's no way that a casino could cater to those players? I mean, obviously they can't serve them pot, but
they can put mirror balls on the ceiling and and the little peace sign water pictures on the wall. But other than that, I don't know what they're gonna do. I think the one thing that, you know, it seems to me that Nevada has already stepped away from where it would be a concern is casinos trying to do some weird enforcement stuff against people who are stoned. Nevada has already passed or repealed their public intoxication statutes. I don't know if they extend to public being stoned, but
yeah,
they do. But they're not going to pay much attention. In fact, you know, people are a little stupid when they're smoking pot, and what is a casino like more than somebody who's a little stupid sitting at a table?
And Vegas has always had...
Although it might slow down the game, Richard.
Oh, yeah, it might slow down the game, especially roulette while they watch the wheel spin around, right? But Vegas has always been, you know, you can have open liquor on the street here, you know, and you know, when I first moved here, they had to-go cups in the bars, and you poured your drink into a go cup and took it with you in your car.
I think they still do.
Oh, really?
Yeah, downtown at least.
So I would think, yeah.
Oh, in your car. No, not in your car. I understand.
I'm sure that the casinos are happy to have their players stoned. But I guess the question will be, how do they cater to them? You know, what can they get away with? Have the regulations even been written yet?
No, they're in the middle of still doing a bunch of them. But as I understand it, per the referendum, okay, you can't smoke in public. You only sellers are going to be the people right now. The immediate ones are the people who are licensed to sell medical marijuana,
who got juiced in for that.
Yeah, all right. It's all going to be pretty restrictive. And if you do get to a casino stoned, you're probably going to have come from your living room and be halfway through your buzz. So,
or got stoned in your parking lot in your car.
Well, that would be wrong. That would still be illegal.
Why would that be illegal?
That's in public. Those windows are not private places.
I wonder if, you know, they have. You can smoke in some hotel rooms, right? So if you can smoke cigarettes in the hotel room, I guess you could smoke pot.
Generally, a hotel, again, turning, since you got a lawyer here, when you rent a hotel room, that's your home away from home. It's looked at as a residence under the law. So I would imagine that you can smoke pot in your hotel room as long as it doesn't violate the hotel's regulations.
The gaming control did come out and say you could not, or at least in that because it would entail lingering odors for the next guy in.
Well, but that's true of tobacco as well. They have smoking and non-smoking rooms.
But they don't have pot smoking rooms.
Yet.
They have tobacco
they
smoking
rooms. It's the bathroom with the fan.
I just want to point out that Bob is puffing away on a vaporizer here. I'm just saying.
Bob Nersessian is puffing away on a vaporizer.
It's an e-cigarette.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Vaping is what I'm doing.
Okay.
Okay, good. Let's talk about something else. You used to be a tax specialist.
Wow, that's an exaggeration. I was a tax attorney for a while. Okay. And I've got a concentration in it from law school.
Good.
It's like a major.
As I said, you used to be a tax specialist. In your book, The Law for Gamblers, you have a chapter called Taxation for Gamblers. Let's assume some listener has been off the grid and hasn't paid taxes for years.
Bob, have you read my book?
I have.
Oh, did you read the chapter on just that question?
I have.
Okay.
But I'm assuming this is one of the chapters we have not yet discussed on the air, and so I thought it would be a good chance to let people discuss it.
Oh. Well, if you recall from the book, and thank you for reading it, my answer to that was the most boring and non-instructive answer in the entire book. I said, the only way to deal with this is to go out and find a tax professional. And that would be a tax attorney or possibly a registered agent CPA who can walk you through getting back on the grid. There are some things to watch out for. A lot of these guys might try to take you back on the grid by just pulling your players' accounts. I've got some anecdotal information that the IRS is not buying that as sufficient documentation. But at the same time, you know, if you cry poor and things like that and come on, there are things that these people can do to put you back on the grid. I suggest that anybody who is off the grid also get on the grid. And you do that through hiring a tax professional. Not me. I wish I could give better answers, but every individual circumstance is different for every person off the grid and has to be tailored by a tax professional to that person so that they can minimize the damage. And there will be damage, and here I am on my high horse giving an opinion, and there should be. If you've been off the grid, you've been stealing from me. And Richard and Bob.
Because we've been paying our taxes.
Yeah.
All right.
I hope I was right when I said that.
I hope so, too. All right. The Department of Justice recently demanded that the largest Bitcoin exchange in the United States turn over the names of everybody who bought or sold Bitcoins from December 2013 to December 2015. Is this something gamblers should be concerned about?
Sure. Especially those who are off the grid. you know. Now, I am not completely up on the rules with how trading Bitcoin and holding Bitcoin is taxed. I imagine that if you have appreciating Bitcoin in a portfolio, that's a capital gain and it's not realized until you liquidate. I don't think that is in any way the question you're asking, but the question you're asking offends me to my soul and a lot of Americans as well. Returning again to the book, this is the whole legal tender argument and, you know, transactional and money is no longer fungible. Bitcoin, with this, Bitcoins become non-fungible because they are not taken in exchange without strings. The strings are that somebody else sees your transaction. And that's always an issue and a problem. Also, the IRS, with respect to this stuff, has a history. The law is pretty clear. They can't use the ability to subpoena, not the law, their own internal regulations, as a fishing expedition. And they are only to use it if they have evidence of tax crimes or illegal tax evasion being committed. But when you read behind the Bitcoin story, their evidence is it can occur, therefore it must be occurring. That's not evidence. That is a fishing expedition. And I think that the whole thing is violating their own rules. I'm nobody on this. The IRS is the 15,000-pound gorilla. And a federal judge stood behind him and said, yeah, you can do that, and we're going to order that that stuff be turned over. I hope that the servicing entity that is being served with the subpoena would try to appeal it, but that's a lot of money and expense that they don't get a return for when all they have to do is print out a sheet of paper to avoid spending it.
Well, but that's only one Bitcoin.
It is, but it's the largest in this country.
Yeah, okay.
And depending on what this non-fishing expedition uncovers or catches, which again makes it a fishing expedition, all right, that'll define what they do with the others. So, you know, but I think we have a new virtual currency that is taking the world by storm right now anyway, don't we?
Other than Bitcoin?
Yeah.
I'm not aware of that. I mean, I know there are several of these virtual currencies, and I think eventually that's where we have to end up is with virtual currencies, but...
Do you really?
Oh, yeah. I think eventually it'll... Yeah. And that will be the death of Advantage Play. Because once you can't come in with cash and be anonymous, then you know, your name will be attached to your money, and we're dead.
I don't think we're going there with the virtual currencies, though, because the virtual currencies, while providing a means of exchange, are lacking some stuff that hard cash has, okay, which is the government a government imprimatur on their value. Okay, you have the full faith and credit of the United States standing behind a $100 bill.
Yep.
You don't own a Bitcoin.
True.
If I buy Bitcoins from your exchange, do I have to give my name? Do I have to give my real name?
Oh, I think there's ways
on the exchange you do, but you can very easily connect with somebody in almost any city where I can go meet somebody and buy Bitcoins for cash. And all I do is give him, there's an app on your phone. So I can get Bitcoins that way anonymously. But I'm sure the government has the ability to track every cell phone and see, you know, who has what on their cell phones, you know.
Borrow your sister's.
Yeah. Now actually, technically, I can buy the Bitcoin from you and just write down this long string of digits and code on a piece of paper. I don't have to use a wallet, a Bitcoin wallet on my phone. And then it would be completely anonymous. But it's hard to do a large sum of money that way. I mean, you might be able to do it $2,000 at a time.
Oh, somebody also packaged an app that allows you to bundle Bitcoins on a separate long secret number. See, I think the government is chasing something that they're never going to be able to catch up to anyway. Because encryption and digitization and all of these things will stay a step ahead of the best efforts of the NSA and the IRS and all the other alphabetical agencies. Because collectively, the entire cyber world is a lot smarter than the cyber section of any given agency. We're getting very philosophical here this afternoon.
Yeah.
We have a question from Michael Shackelford, Wizard of Odds, former co-host of this show, an occasional guest since he was a co-host. He wants to ask Bob Nersessian about what Shaq calls the 32-bit integer malfunction. What this is...
If you're going to re-explain Michael's, maybe you should shorten it, which is simply...
I will.
Okay.
It's always supposed to be a positive integer. And in pennies, it comes out to $43 million in change. If by a programming error it goes negative, it's still $43 million because the minus sign gets lost.
The actual data is held in a circular format is another way to look at it. So 0 minus 1 is your 43 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then you work down or up off of that. So yes, but
so if there was a 43, if so you're playing this slot machine,
which a woman was,
right? 10 pennies at a time, and all of a sudden it says the casino owes her $43 million.
Now, in Michael's question, was this a software glitch or a software feature that was this a spike somewhere in the software, or was it a actual feature of the software and it acted as programmed? That's not explained, but it is important.
He called it a programming error, so I assume it did act as programming, as okay. programmed, but it was not an intentional. They didn't want this to happen.
Do you know? Oh, obviously not. and I don't think we actually got here, but the point is that all of a sudden there's going to be, once you roll to the maximum number of pennies that can be stored in this circular database has a peak of the 43 million and a base of zero. And because it never goes less than zero, you can never hit the peak. And when you look at $43 million with pennies, I think Michael even says it's something like 2 to the 32nd power.
Yes.
Which is an incredibly bizarre number. All of that being said...
A big one, too.
Yeah. the fact that it was programmed that way might even depend on the state you're in. Okay. For example, all the software in Nevada goes through an approval process. At that point, couldn't the manufacturer say, well, the state did this? And at that point, if the state's treasury is at risk to pay that money because of their negligence, do you think anybody's going to get $43 million on that? And the issue is whether or not that money is collectible because it is a programming. Because the computer acted as programmed and therefore did not malfunction, right?
Right. That's the argument of the
lady playing the 10 cents.
Yeah. And I've won that for that lady to the tune of $100,000 on a 50-cent video poker machine. That was a case you could get it from the gaming control board. They have a written decision on it. It's Alper versus Sahara. And it was a programming error of the machine at the site. This is back when the actual controllers were
about
94.
19 is a long time ago.
Nah, I think it was about 97.
Okay.
But the controllers were 386s. Which tells you how long ago we're dealing with there. And the tech was changing the hold rate on the machine from a half a cent per dollar to a quarter cent a dollar for the progressive. But F5 and 5 did two different things, and he hit F5. And then he hit F5 again, and then he hit F5 again, and nothing's happening. And then he hit F5 two more times and said, oh, that doesn't do anything. So he hit the 5, and he goes, oh, there it is. And that took it down a quarter point. But every time he hit F5, the actual programmed-in starting jackpot amount increased $100,000. Okay? So... the programmer took it up to $500,000, but the machine itself had a 99,999 safety limit on it. And so the person playing the game, per the decision, Mr. Alper, looked up and the machine had changed to a $100,000 progressive on the fives through kings. Four of a kind. So...
And you're going to hit one of those approximately every 700 hands, something like
well,
that.
Well, he was playing two machines as fast as you possibly
could. I bet he couldn't. Stewart's fast.
And this was still during the time of you had to feed your coins.
Yeah.
So it didn't take him long to hit it. Mr. Alper knows me and had me out there after he hit it. And I remember the first thing that the casino executive said was, you're not getting this money. Okay. And I'm thinking, well, what are we going to do? And we made sure we wrote a very lengthy report. And then when we went in front of the gaming control board, the hearing officer held for us. Then we went in front of the board. And I just like to tell this story because I love what I said. Your honors, not your honors. Gentlemen, this being the gaming control board members. Casinos regularly come in here and defend against the player who was dealt the 10, jack, queen, and king of diamonds and the two of hearts and threw away the king of diamonds because they hit the button wrong and the ace of diamonds comes up and they want their $4,000. And you tell them every single time you have to hit the right buttons. We're in here because somebody on the other side of this game pushed the wrong button. It is exactly the same thing. And, you know, I got to tell you, those three board members tore into the casino's attorney and accepted that outright. Now, there's another decision you can get from over at the board that was decided on a case I did, Kreider versus, I believe, Hard Rock. And the money was $500,000 on something not directly analogous, but a very similar analysis. Okay? And the board said no. So, I think the test is how much you're getting. Okay? If it's $43 million, ain't happening. I think $100,000 might be at the max. And I know that that's not a legal rationale, but that's the practical rationale of what I have seen.
Well, that's better than it used to be. You know, because I think years ago, the player just was never going to get the money.
Oh,
you know,
years ago, I can take it even. Years ago, it was just this bad. And this is a case that happened. I don't remember which major strip property it was, but I'm talking about before they allowed for players to sue for their winnings. A guy hit a $30,000 or so Keno jackpot, went to cash it. They said no. Never provided any valid reason or evidence why it shouldn't be paid. And they threw the guy out of court and said, you have no cause of action. Because you can't sue for a gambling debt.
Wow.
Okay? Which is the position the casinos are actually in right now, not the players. And he tried to take it to the courts, and the courts said, no, you have to go in front of the board, and there is no cause of action or claim in front of the board for a gambler to recoup gambling debts. So you don't have any rights to redress. And I think the casino, I don't remember which one it was, but for some reason they must have felt pretty certain that they were above the sanctioning authority at the time. I think this was back during the time when there was purported mafia influence all over Nevada gaming, and maybe that had something to do with the casino's assurance that they could get away with this. But something told them that they felt that they were safe from being prosecuted or having their license taken away. So their position was just, you don't get the money. And the law's position at that time was, and that's the way it is.
Wow. The a case that was cited by Mike Shackelford in his question, the lady did not go away totally empty-handed. She did get a steak dinner out of it. And this question to you is, would you have taken the case and what kind of settlement would you have accepted?
It's hard to ever put numbers on that till I'm living it. Assuming everything was juicy. But I'm looking at it, and I know that the 43 million's not going to work. Nobody's going to say, I think the Aladdin, last time it was bankrupt and sold for 55 million. Nobody's going to say, you win a 40-story hotel on a 50-cent bet. On a dime bet, I'm sorry.
I don't remember what it was.
It ain't going to happen. So I would have looked at it and said, well, you know, I'll take a shot at getting a settlement for you. And if we can get anything over 30 to 50, you should bank it. But in the long run, pigs get slaughtered and we're the pig here.
So if you could get them up to 10,000, grab it quick.
In the circumstance you're describing with 43 million on a dime bet. Yeah, maybe.
Very good.
I'm sorry to just say the law doesn't matter and practicalities and opinions take over, but there is a point where that always happens.
Yeah.
And it's somewhere well south of $43 million on a dime.
All right. We've been talking to Bob Nersessian. Let's take a brief moment and hear from our sponsors.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. From December 11th through 24th, you can pay for virtually everything at the South Point for half price using your points. The points do not need to be earned in December, just spent. This is a promotion that has run for many years, and many players accumulate points all year long. There will be 2x points Christmas Day on video poker, midnight to midnight, all machines eligible, no limits. The next semester of free video poker classes has been announced. They'll be on Wednesdays, beginning January 25th. There will be 2 classes this semester never taught before, namely 9-7 double bonus quick quads and 8-6 bonus poker deluxe Ultimate X. Neither of these classes will be geared for beginners, which means basically many listeners to this show could get value from the classes. The complete schedule may be found on bobdancer.com. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play a lot of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games, including quick quads. The game of the week is 100 play draw poker with quick quads. Quick quads is a 6 coins per line game where you get paid for 4 of a kinds, that is quads, for a trip plus 2 cards that add up to the trip, such as 10-10-10-5-3 or maybe 2-2-2-ace-ace. This is a fun game to play. VideoPoker.com is one place you can get correction while playing this game. Should you become a gold member.
Richard, how do people get in touch with us?
First of all, we welcome your questions. You can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. Or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can get the show delivered to you automatically every week at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or sign up at gamblingwithanedge.com. To find an archive of all the old episodes, you can get that at bobdancer.com.
Thank you, Bob Nersessian. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody.
Can I say, 1, you're welcome, and 2, you didn't finish with telling them to buy my book again like you promised you would. Yeah.
Hey, what was the name of that book?
Do you want me to mention where I said the latest book,
yeah, The
Law
the
for
beginning.
Gambler,
I said reading
for all intelligent players. So that was the deal?
No, it wasn't the deal. I just made that up, ladies and gentlemen, but I'm getting it out there again.
It is a good book.
Because baby needs a new pair of shoes.
When I said I thought it was required reading by all intelligent gamblers, I meant it. So thank you again. Go get the book. Goodbye. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Goodbye.